Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Well, I have to preface this. I have to tell you that I have always believed it really happened. I traveled around the world doing my agency work, and in the process, I was able to see incredible archaeological sites in Peru and Central America, Europe, and other parts of the world. I worked my way through undergraduate school and college as a machinist for 5 years. I was a full-time machinist making precision aircraft parts. I understand cutting, angularity, precision tolerances, and what I have seen in these sites with cutting of stones and megalith structures, there is no earthly way any of that could have ever been done by a guy with a flint chisel and a rock hammer. So I've always believed what I saw when I had the occasion to look inside the historical intelligence collection component of CIA's library were many, many boxes containing odds and ends of stuff that had been collected back all the way from the early OSS days, apparently. What I saw in those in that one box that I looked in validated for me what I already felt. It was not a conclusive new piece of evidence. It was nothing that says and should ever be implied that as a government organization, the CIA sits on top of additional knowledge or is covering up anything. Here's the important part. It's what was not in the box that's important. There were not alien eyeballs in little jars of formaldehyde or, you know, parts of their anatomies or their little goggles or their parts of their spacesuit. There were things in there that somebody placed in there for some kind of reason when the issue of Roswell and odds and ends information was being collated. It's the old adage, the whole is greater than the sum of the
parts.
What
was in the box?
What I saw in the box validated my already long-held belief that that was an alien craft that crashed and that there were remains recovered.
And what was that? What was in the box?
Well, I am not going to tell you what was in the box. That information belongs to the CIA. It's not mine to give specificity about. It was my decision to say I saw a box that was unclassified, that there were things in it that validated my own belief, but what was in the box is not mine to talk about.
Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to our UFO special on this Wednesday evening in July. Hot time in the old time tonight, almost any place in the country and around the world. That was Stephen Nolan of the BBC talking with the subject at hand, Chase Brandon. And I thought it was very interesting that we play that clip simply because it gives you a flavor of what Chase Brandon is all about. And frankly, he sounds like the stereotype CIA agent all the way. And we have a man who has actually met Chase Brandon that's going to join us here in a moment. And Lee Spiegel, who, of course, is a man of some note. Right now he writes for Huffington Press. He used to be on AOL and before that NBC Radio. And so Lee's been around the block a little bit. And so he knows how to judge these people. So he was nice enough to come on tonight. And he's with us from New York. Lee Spiegel, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing tonight, Jerry?
I'm doing okay. Chase Brandon in that clip says that he believed Roswell was an ET thing all along.
He does say that. Well, for what it's worth, so do I, but I can't prove it one way or the other.
Yeah, I understand. And then we have a friend of both of us, Grant Cameron, who was on with us last week on our Monday show talking about this whole incident and the Avery. We may even get into that before it's over. And definitely we opened up the show with Nick Pope talking about the latest United Kingdom Ministry of Defense dump and on data about UFOs and paranormal activity. And one thing different this time around is they actually discussed a little policy. And, Lee, I know you've written a couple articles about that on the Huffington Post.
I did, and I just today I was reading an article by David Clark, who is the official consultant for the National Archives over there, and I was actually surprised in his article where he said I was the only media person who actually wrote about the fact that the Ministry of Defense were concerned that some of their Royal Air Force jet fighter pilots may have died while encountering UFOs. I can't believe nobody else picked up on that.
Yeah, I read that in your article, and Jane Swartley, our producer, she read that as well and called it attention to me. And Grant Cameron, I think that's kind of interesting that they put that in that release, don't you?
Yeah, it is. It is interesting, and it doesn't surprise me that people don't pick it up. It's never surprised me after many years in ufology, the stuff that goes out there. Like the Chase Brannon story, for example, he went on June the 23rd, and Lee did his story on July the 8th.
Right.
And between then, Robbie Graham had the story in England, and he was talking to me, dragged me into the story, and he couldn't get anybody in the United States to take the story. Nobody would touch it.
Yeah, you know, we thought about getting Ronnie Graham on, and we need to do it at some time because he's been really at the forefront of this. But we can only do so many people at a time, not necessarily because of technical reasons, but it's radio. It's hard to keep track of everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can't run the little letters on the bottom of the screen saying who you are when you have five or six people on there.
Well, you got the key guy. You got Lee. That's the key guy.
Yeah. Well, I see Lee Spiegel running down at the bottom here.
and now I'm running away from the CIA.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, and I want to talk about Chase Brannon first of all, with both of you guys, and then we'll get into some of these other subjects.
Yeah.
But first of all, Lee, you mentioned it to me today, and Grant called my attention to this Poll Daddy poll. I love the name of that website, Poll Daddy. I mean, can you believe that they got this this thing going on about what you think about Chase Brannon already?
I know. It's like he's the flavor of the month, you know?
Why was the one that put the poll up?
I got Jane Swartley here on the line, Grant, and what we're going to do is we're going to give the latest results here. Jane just checked it just before we came on the air. Jane, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good, you got to speak up a little bit. And,
okay, I'm sorry.
That's our okay. Producer, and she's been checking the poll results. Tell our listeners a little bit what this poll says.
Well, there are five options for people to choose, and do you want me to tell you what the options are?
Yes. We need
okay.
Need to.
Okay, well,
we're flying blind here. A lot of the audience knows nothing about this poll, so let's just give them some coverage right. They do or do not deserve.
The first one is that Chase is telling the truth as he knows it, and that has 29% of the votes at the moment. The second one is he's telling a fictional version of what he knows. That's got 25%. Third is he was given orders by the CIA to disinform, and that gets 26%. And the next one is that he made it up to sell his books, and that got 20%. And the last one is that he's a kook who's doing his own thing, and that has gotten no votes.
No percent?
So, zero for that one.
Well, I would have added an extra possibility for people to vote on. When he and I met on Saturday here in New York, I was needling him a little bit. Every time, like every couple of minutes when we were talking, I would say something like, so tell me, Chase, if in fact that is your real name.
Yeah, before you go any further, Lee, Chase Brandon, I'm glad you brought that up. That sounds like a stage name. Sounds like he's back in the movies.
Well, you know, I would have added that to the poll. It's like, you know, is Chase Brandon his real name? And he said to me, yes, it is. It's short for Charles. His name is Charles Brandon. Well, but you know what? And then Stan Friedman, our nuclear physicist UFO friend, likes to talk about now how he did a documentary a while ago called UFOs Are Real, and it just so happened that the executive producer of that documentary was a man named Brandon Chase.
Makes you wonder.
Well, but you know what? I don't wonder about these things. Maybe I should. You know, people keep telling me, don't bother to read the comments of your stories because it will make you crazy and your head will explode. And they're right.
You got a point. You know, Grant Cameron, the thing about that poll, the reason I wanted to bring it up, it's kind of like politics. Everybody's divided there about the same group, 25, 26, 27%.
Yeah,
so and they're all cynical.
Yeah, well, people are sort of believing it or they're not believing it. I was kind of surprised that so many people are believing it. Maybe the CIA is, adding their input to the poll or whatever. The thing that sort of surprised me, like Lee had, a million and a half hits on the article.
That's right.
And I think there's less than 100 votes, so I'm waiting for all the people that read the article to vote. We haven't got many people voting yet, so.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, in case you don't know yet, there's a new We the People petition up there petitioning the White House to investigate Chase Brandon's claims. And as of yesterday, when I was looking at it, they were up to 317 signatures, but they need 25,000 in order to get a response from the White House.
Yeah, I believe Stephen Bassett put that one up, huh?
Yes, he did. And you know, I'm not sure that it's going to matter. First of all, I don't think that they're going to get the 25,000. And even if by some chance, if they did, well, how do you think the White House is going to respond? It'll respond the same way that the CIA responded last week with a little statement that said, well, we looked for the box that was supposedly said Roswell on it. We couldn't find it. Thank you for writing to us.
You're probably right. In fact, I know you're right.
Well, what are the options? What else could the CIA, how else could they have responded last week? They either were going to say what they said or they were going to say, well, yes, we found the box. There is a box that says Roswell, and thanks for writing to us.
Yep. Grant Cameron, you've dealt with bureaucratic language for a long time now. Do you agree with Lee on all of that?
Oh, yeah.
You've got a different take?
Yeah, I agree. It's the way I describe this is the way I see it. And I'm giving a lecture in England in 2 weeks. I'm going to deal with this whole disclosure thing, how the government deals with it. And I think I have probably about three dozen cases, similar type cases, where the government will sort of put something out, pull it back, and then go with the party line and say, you know, the Blue Book thing, there's no national security, no ET, no cover-up. And the CIA, the way they've come back with theirs is they'll quote the 97 study, this CIA study that says, you know, it was U2, SR-71, no cover-up, no national security. And so politicians, even as Chase says, I mean, when they asked him about disclosure and non-disclosure on the one interview, he says basically it depends. The people at the 60,000-foot level, the White House, the, you know, executive branch, Congress, all these people, if it's in their vested interest, they're going to disclose, and if it's not in their vested interest, they're not going to disclose. So it's so political, and I think people have to realize that these people are in a box. They're you know, just doing their job, and they're so limited in what they can do. They're not allowed to really sort of go out there and give their own opinion and that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, Lee, you can chime in too as well about this, what Grant is saying.
Yeah, I tend to agree completely, and I really agree. with former Army Colonel John Alexander. And this is a guy who had a top secret security clearance. And lately, people have been accusing John of being a real man in black, of spreading disinformation around about UFOs, because, gee, all he did was put together a committee of scientists and military people in the 1980s, I believe, and all that they did, their whole purpose for coming together, was to study UFOs and to see if they could come up with any evidence that there had been a cover-up. And according to their results, there was no cover-up. Well, the UFO community doesn't want to hear that. And John says, and I kind of believe him, that disclosure has already happened. And I'll tell you guys, very often I feel like if I hear the word disclosure again, my head will explode. You know, everybody's throwing this out. I mean, people say, well, 2012, it's going to be the year of disclosure. Well, didn't they say that about last year and then the year before, I believe? It's like, come on, disclosure has happened. If you take the word disclosure literally, many people, government people, military people have come out and disclosed what they know, what they've experienced. That's disclosure. If the public doesn't want to believe it, then there's nothing else that we can do about it. But there has been a lot of disclosure already.
And we just finished doing an hour with the son of a colonel who's passed on, who told him a lot of things about UFOs and being involved in investigations. We do shows like that all the time. You look at the polls, I think most people believe there is some sort of UFO ET action going on. I've seen ratings as high as 70%.
Yes. Yeah, people do believe that we're not alone in the universe. Most scientists, especially astronomers, will tell you the same thing, that we're not alone. The famous Drake equation created by astronomer Frank Drake, the statistical numbers are so high that they estimated that only in the Milky Way galaxy, which is a very ordinary galaxy among millions of galaxies, in our little galaxy, they have estimated there might be 10,000 planets with civilizations on them. And that's a pretty amazing number for just one little insignificant galaxy. So it's a big universe out there. We can't, as humans, we can't even comprehend how big or important everything is out there.
Now, Grant, did you say you're going to be in England in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I'm at the Leeds at the Exopolitics Conference. And the lecture I was originally going to give was on consciousness. All the stories about government people and talking with aliens and all the weird stuff that's gone on inside the government. And then one of the speakers pulled out, and because this Chase Brandon thing was going on and because I put out the article on the Falcon, I said, well, can I do a second? And I want to go through what I call disclosure. It's on my website. I did it 10 years ago. Disclosure pattern, and I put all this stuff on the website years and years ago about all these sort of disclosures that have sort of dropped out and given us pieces of the puzzle and stuff. And then they agreed, yeah, that I could do the second one. So that's where I'm sort of racing to put this second piece together of all these different types of stories of people that have come out and basically told a story, and the story gets big like this Chase Brandon thing. And then after a month or two, because the government never directly comments yes or no on it, the story just sort of fades away, like with Corso, or there's a whole number of these types of stories, the Falcon and Bill Moore and stuff. And so I just thought that if you put them all together, people would go like, wow, you know, all these, you know, with Pandolfi and Kit Green and Lundahl, and there's just so many of these stories of people who are dropping this stuff sort of into the UFO community. And it's all sort of, my impression, just sort of giving us an idea of what's going on and yet maintaining the cover-up.
Yeah, it's almost people who are keeping up with this, it's almost like a whole hum thing at this time. you're not going to talk about Roswell again, are you? You know, that type of thing. And so maybe there's a method to their madness.
Oh, yeah.
Of dribbling this stuff out.
Well, you know, also the funny thing
I know that works in politics.
And you know, a lot of people forget that the whole Roswell thing, even the military admitted that there was a cover-up, because when they said that it was a weather balloon and then changed their story, they said it was Project Mogul, it was a spy balloon. Well, they actually admitted that they covered it up because it was a spy balloon.
Yeah.
So of course they kept it covered up. Why would they just put out all that information for everybody to know? So yes, they admitted that something was covered up. But whether that was the actual truth is another thing. Even Chase said to me, he said, it really could so many people back in the day, back in 1947, so many eyewitnesses, civilian and military, did they all somehow come together in a sense of collusion and decide, well, we have nothing better to do here in 1947. Let's make up this lie, this big story. We're all going to get together and we're going to lie about it, and we're all going to get our story straight so it all sounds the same. I mean, really, what are the odds, he said to me, that so many people could have lied about it? I remember Stan Friedman told me in 1978 when Stan was first digging into Roswell, like initially they had something like 62 people, military people, coming forward, military and civilian, who were there in 47 and who in 78 were still alive. But these people have been, you know, passing over since then. And, you know, we're going to get to the point here where there won't be anyone still left alive.
No, you're right. I'm down to talking to third generations people.
Yeah,
from...
exactly. You know, you're talking to the children of the people who were there.
Yeah, the children of those children.
Yeah, and you get to that point where then the skeptics and the debunkers will say, well, how can these people be reliable? They weren't even there. We can't possibly consider anything that they're telling us about their father or their uncle or their grandfather as being valid. So the skeptics and debunkers, this plays right into their hands.
And I guess time is on the side if you want to keep something confused. I guess obfuscation is the word that the government's used all along, with different stories, different people coming out with different things, whether they did it on purpose or that's just the way it dribbled out. It's kind of confusing to anyone. But I think if we looked at the overall concept, something happened in 1947 in Roswell, New Mexico. I mean, not everybody there would be a great fiction writer, as you say, Lee.
Yeah, and from documents that have come through, again from eyewitness reports from military, apparently Roswell was not the only place where something crashed. And it kind of makes you wonder if these really are visitors from someplace else with this amazing technology, what's wrong with their technology that they've had so many crashes?
Yeah, and the grant, I don't know if you buy into the radar screwing up the avionics story or not. It seems logical to me.
Yeah, I don't really get into that. I just sort of look into the, you know, is this story legitimate? Is it not? And I sort of look at it like, I think they're up to like 600 Roswell witnesses. And if you look back at the Blue Book report in 69, they sort of broke down. There was like 22% unknowns. And the hoax rate, and this was the Air Force putting this out, so they're not really on our side. And they said the hoax rate was 2%. So the way I look at Roswell is if 2% of the people are hoaxing, that's 12 people hoaxing out of 600, that leaves 588 people telling the truth. Yeah. And basically all said the same thing. Yeah, this was for real. It was an extraterrestrial crash. And that's the way I look at it. I just sort of figure that, you know, most people are telling the truth. You're going to get the odd one that lies. And then you get into the disinformation thing, which I think is when something leaks, they'll try to throw a bunch of garbage in there to sort of muddy the waters. But Jacques Vallée years ago had made a quote about this whole thing that, you know, there's this conspiracy to destroy the UFO community and make us crazy. And he said, something does not make sense here. Why would someone in Washington mount a disinformation campaign if the only effort was to confuse members of the UFO research community, which is a very small group without much influence over the public at large? And so I think Valet sees the same as me, is that there's something underlying here. There's a truth to this whole thing, despite all the stories that might not fit together and people that might turn out not to be telling the truth. There's some core thing that is worth chasing here. And I guess, you know, Lee's been in it many years, you've been in it, I have. It's sort of like we wasted our life doing this, and, you know, we believe there's something to it, otherwise we would have given up a long time ago.
Lee, let's get to Chase Brandon and your personal meeting. You told me today he was, for lack of a better term, he looked like he was a CIA agent.
I'm 6 foot tall, and standing next to him when we first met on Saturday, I swear he was 12 or 13 feet tall. I mean, it might have been the heat wave we were having in New York that made me think that. But he's a very tall, foreboding man, and I could tell that probably in his heyday, he was probably a very successful super CIA agent, counter-espionage man who could probably really take good care of himself in a fight.
he alluded to that in that BBC interview, that he had been in South America and Europe and investigated a lot of things. And
when you meet him, you give him, you know, he gives you the impression like you don't want to piss him off.
But he was, he speaks, I guess this goes back to the James Bond syndrome. He speaks like an intelligent, mild-mannered fellow.
Absolutely. He's very precise in how he talks, the words he chooses. He doesn't want to be, he doesn't want to misrepresent himself. He wants people to understand what he has to say. He's not completely forthcoming, but then I wouldn't expect him to be, considering he had a 25-year career as an agent of the CIA before he had 10 years as the official entertainment liaison for the CIA. And he lived, traveled around the world under many aliases. That's why I kept asking him what his real name was. And
Maybe he's used to some different versions he doesn't know himself.
but he's very precise in what he has to say. And when he said that he saw this box that had a label on it that said Roswell, and he looked inside, and he rummaged around in it for a short time, and he quickly closed the box, locked it up, put it back on the shelf, and said to himself, "My God, it really happened." Now, he never actually said what was in the box, except that there were materials and photographs. He did not...
Yeah, did you press him on that?
I did. And, of course, everyone else did. And he said, "Well, I'm not... That's all I'm going to say on the subject." And I said, "Well, if that's all you're going to say, then I'm going to sit here and I'm going to infer that the photographs that you saw in there must have had something to do with alien bodies and a ship. Because otherwise, if there were like provocative photos of CIA agents with women, you probably wouldn't be having this conversation."
What was his demeanor when you said all that?
Almost,
I guess he was calm and cool.
He was very calm and cool because I believe he, to some degree, has rehearsed this. He knows exactly what he's saying. The things that he said on both of his coast-to-coast AM appearances, and then what he said to me, and then I think what he said out to the BBC recently, he's saying the same thing, which you would expect someone to say who, frankly, is on a promotional tour. In this case, it's his book. Now, I called him at one point last week before he came to New York, and I said, "You know, we should do a follow-up interview or follow-up story, because a lot of people are really coming down hard on you and criticizing you, and maybe this would be a way for you to give your point of view and to kind of get back at all these people that are pushing you into the wall. And he said, you know, I don't really want to talk about anything else now except my book. I really don't want to. I just want to talk about my book. And I said, but Chase, your book is all about a guy who's in the CIA who has uncovered the Roswell secret. So how are we not going to talk about this? Because that's what
you say.
He said, well, you know, we'll just have to take it the way it is, and that's what I'll talk about. And he keeps saying to people, when you read the book, read between the lines in the book, and you'll get your answers. Well, okay, sure. It's his first science fiction novel. He said to me he would like nothing more than to spend the rest of his life just writing more books and having nothing to do with anything, you know, any kind of spy capers. Well, I said, but Chase, you opened more than one box. You know, there was that one box that you say you opened at CIA, but then there's another box, like a Pandora's box, because you've already opened it. And this story will go away, as many of them do in the UFO field, but if you keep coming back trying to sell books, and they're all about the same kind of theories, then at some point, people are going to get wise to you and then may not pay attention to you and may not buy your books. So I just suggested that we get together again and do something just to get people off of his brain a little bit. This whole We the People petition at the White House. Well, is that really necessary? Does the Obama administration have to be forced into making a statement where they'll basically say, if they have to make a statement at all they're going to do is come back and say, well, we've checked into Mr. Brandon, but because he was a CIA agent and he signed a secrecy oath, we're not allowed to give any information about him because it might affect national security. And thanks for signing this petition. I mean,
yeah.
That's all that's going to happen.
Grant, I like your style in research anyway, and you've been parsing every word that this guy said in public. You pretty much agree with what Lee's take is?
Yeah, I agree. I think the only difference between Lee and I is that I still lean to this thing that what he knows about Roswell is true. I don't really believe the box story, because to me it's like the box story is not classified. You can talk about that, but you can't talk what's in the story, in the box, which would be classified. It's my understanding of how classification works and stuff like that. I believe that he's telling the truth. What I would be interested in is he said, you know, he's been longtime interest in ancient astronauts, in the Roswell story. He seems to know the story pretty well. And my interest would be, well, you've had this interest. Did you not ask anybody inside the CIA? That's where I think he's getting it from. He's getting it from people that he's talked to, because he's been interested an awful long time. And some of the stuff that he talks about indicated to me that he knew an awful lot more than just some guy who had found a box. For example, he uses the word phenomenology, which in the UFO community, the only people that use that word are the people who are chasing the Avery and are dealing with, Pandolfi and the CIA and all that story. The word phenomenology is used all the time. And the other thing that sort of struck me as weird was when he sort of gives the party line that the CIA isn't really interested in the subject, that it's sort of an annoyance to them. And then he refers to this 1997 study, and this is when I was part of this letter that was written to the CIA, when the CIA returned to us and said, we checked Brandon's story, we didn't find any documents, end of story. They referred to this 1997 CIA study that was done. And that study was done, and one of the things, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I heard, I don't think it's public knowledge, that the study was done on unclassified CIA material, that classified material was never looked at. And I heard that sort of through the Avery, and he mentioned this, and it just rang a bell. I went, man, he knew the story, that this was just a study on the unclassified, the FOIA material that had been released by the CIA. So there was things that he was saying that sort of indicated to me that he had a much broader knowledge. And that, if I ever had a chance to talk to him, that's what I'd be interested in. Did you never talk to anybody in the CIA? What was the reaction of the CIA when you came out? Did they know you were going to talk about this? Surely he's a media guy. They must have known that he was going to come out with this, or they would have reacted to him coming out and creating this big stir. My thing is the internal politics of what's going on inside the CIA with regard to the phenomena, rather than Chase Brannon's story. I agree that he's telling a story. He's telling something he wants us to know. And my difference is I think it's fictionalized. It's the same as his book. I mean, he's telling a fictional tale in his book, and I think that's the way he works. You've got to protect the classified material, so you sort of put fiction around it and you get the stuff out. It doesn't mean he's a bad guy. He's trying to get the stuff out. He's trying to tell us something. But my difference is the way it's being done. I think it's being done the same way it's been done for 50 years by various people, you know, and these are the stories I'm going to tell when I'm in England. This has happened many times before.
Yeah, well, let me run this by both of you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe I'm naive. Well, there's no maybe to it, but I think he couldn't have said it more plainly than Roswell happened, and there's evidence it did happen.
Well, the thing is, remember...
And he's speaking from a source, a level of responsibility, and it seems to me like that's double speak, but at the same time, he's saying, pay attention to what I'm saying, but read between the lines, as he told you, Lee.
Well, again, remember... Yes, everybody, believers, non-believers, skeptics, debunkers, everybody can agree on one thing. Something happened in Roswell in 1947, okay? So, you know, when he says it really happened, you have to kind of read in between the lines. But with him, he said that it validated, the stuff that he said he saw validated everything he believed about the fact that there was a spaceship that landed and that there were alien cadavers. Okay, fine. Many other people said that too. A lot of the initial eyewitnesses who Stan Friedman had found, they said the same things too. Why would we believe them less or more than we would believe Chase Brannon? I don't know. A lot of people say a lot of
things. I think it's just another level of somebody saying it.
Well, only because, you know, when you hear the story, you know, ex-CIA agent says, hey, listen, prior to his first appearance on Coast to Coast AM, I'd never heard of the guy's name. I didn't know who Chase Brannon was. His name...
I didn't either. I hated to admit that. I hate to say some other radio show beat me, but I didn't know about him.
Yeah, no, nobody did. He just kind of came out of nowhere. That kind of it's like an attestment to the fact that he was a really good CIA agent. He could come and go.
You know, you had some pretty high profile already, Lee Spiegel, but with Huffington Press, it seems to me like you probably are on the inside with Washington insiders, because they do look at that quite a lot. Has that opened a lot of doors for you?
Just because I'm working for the Huffington Post? Only in the sense that when I call people to interview them, or if I send them an email and ask them to give me some time to talk to me, when I say that I'm with the Huffington Post, and I will sometimes send them some materials of things that I've done in the past, that have been part of what people call disclosure of UFOs. I want people, and like I did with Chase, I wanted him to feel comfortable with me so that he would say, yes, I'll talk to you. And again, I didn't know him. He didn't know me. And and it was, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were coming up on the Roswell anniversary. And for me, July 8th, that Sunday, I wanted to do a story that was about the anniversary, not of the crash, but of the anniversary of that first famous headline that said that the military had captured a flying saucer. That was the anniversary target that I was looking for. So that was on a Sunday, so I had to have my story ready by Sunday morning. And I didn't know how to get in touch with Chase Brandon. I went to his website, and I found his email. He had a couple of email addresses there. I sent him an email at both of his addresses, and I just introduced myself. I said, I'm with the Huffington Post. I'm really interested in your story. Any chance you could talk to me within the next day or two, because I'm kind of on a deadline to get to this anniversary. And I sent him that email on Thursday prior to my deadline. I didn't even think I was going to hear from him, but the next day he called me. And I was really surprised. And he called me and said,
you're getting better reactions than I did with that website.
I mean, I took a shot. And lots of times, that's kind of what this is all about when I'm trying to get like a really good story. I just take a shot, say, here's what I'm doing. Can I talk to you? And sometimes they respond, and it's great. And I'm happy that Huffington Post is happy because I've been able to get a lot of really interesting stories. But you know what, Jerry? Even if I've written something really hot, I wrote a story a few months ago that I thought was going to be huge, even bigger than this Chase Brandon thing. And in fact, it was another story about a UFO crash, but not of a crash in the United States. This one was in Russia. And I thought, well, people are going to love this, not because there was a possible crash in Russia, but because some of the materials from that crash were included in an Area 51 exhibit that opened at the Smithsonian National Atomic Testing Museum in Las Vegas. And there's an actual display in there, and the title of the display is Authentic Alien Artifact. And I thought, well, geez, everybody's going to jump on this. And I got a lot of good reader hits, but the rest of the world didn't seem to care. And I was sitting, spinning my wheels, going, why? Why aren't people jumping on this? This is a big story. This is really amazing. And it just kind of died. And so you just never know in this business what people are going to resonate with in the whole UFO field. In this case,
yeah, I've been watching that exhibit out there in Las Vegas, and it seems to me there's a lot of things that are kind of earth-shaking, and nobody's really paid much attention to
it. I know. I mean, it's amazing to me. I was invited to go up there in March for the grand opening of this exhibit. And so I got out there while they were still actually putting things up and hammering the walls and actually putting the displays together. And the CEO and director of the museum, Alan Palmer, is a former highly decorated Air Force and Navy jet fighter pilot. Really interesting man, and now he's running this museum. And I've said to people, try and follow the dots here. This is a Smithsonian museum. The Smithsonian. It's a national museum. It's one of only a handful of national museums. Why does this museum have an Area 51 exhibit that includes a display that says Authentic Alien Artifact? Hello? Is anybody listening to me out there?
Yeah, I understand.
You know?
I don't understand, actually.
Neither do I.
Yeah, Grant, how about you? You get stories that you think are great and nobody pays attention to?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's hitting the nail on the head. I mean, I think our biggest one was Scott Crane and I in 89 wrote the book UFOs, MJ-12 and the Government, which is about Dr. Eric Walker, who we thought we'd broken the cover up. We was like, this was the former president of Penn State University, big Ivy League college for 16 years, chairman of the board of the biggest military think tank in the United States, the Institute for Defense Analysis, and basically was telling us, yeah, there'd been contact with aliens, and he knew all the people on MJ-12, and we were wasting our time, and all this stuff. And I can still remember we had the book and it was all ready to go, and the Penn State newspaper had picked up on it, they had read the book, and the girl went to interview him, and he was the type of guy that would try to talk around the subject, but couldn't hang up the phone. And when she went to interview him, he said, I deny what's in the book. I'm busy. And he hung up the phone. And I said to Scott Crane, because he was at Penn State University, I said, so when's she going back to interview him again? This is like, he's a major figure on the campus. And Scott said, she's not. She was so intimidated by the guy, she refused to go back and do an interview. And that was it. It never even made the Penn State newspaper. And so now I say, you know, I mean, if he had molested a couple little boys, well, then we'd have a story. I mean, now at Penn State, that's all I can talk about is this Jerry Sandusky. And we thought the biggest story in the world was this Walker story, which was just the stuff he was saying. And the level that this guy was at in the U.S. government was just amazing. And the story absolutely went nowhere. And so, and I think in ufology, we see this all the time, that you figure it's going to be big, and people just absolutely don't pick up on it.
Yeah, I'm at the Avery. You're pretty fascinated with that. How about you, Lee? Have you done anything on the Avery?
No, I haven't.
Let me give you a story about the Avery, the one that I thought would be big. And I think I talked to you about this, Jerry. I follow all the stuff that Ronald Pandolfi, he's the top scientist in the CIA, and he has this fascination with UFO, and he uses Dan Smith as his spokesman. And he was offered to go on Coast to Coast, and he said, no, Dan's my spokesman. And so Dan Smith went on Coast to Coast, and he gave all this stuff about Pandolfi, and Pandolfi says this, and he was going to go to Los Alamos to talk to the live alien, and just this wild stuff that he's putting through this Dan Smith character. And the one thing that Dan Smith had put out that I put on my website was this story about in 2000, and I followed it when 2000 was there, when Bush came in, there was the election, and there was a group, it's a sort of a long story, but there's a group, and they wanted Pandolfi to go and give a briefing to Bush Jr. And the discussion went, and then it didn't happen. And so Dan Smith puts on there about the fact that the briefing didn't take place, and that Pandolfi had said, we tell the president what he needs to know. On the subject of UFOs, we tell the president what he needs to know and hope we don't have to put him down. And Dan Smith puts this on his website, and I broadcast this, and I figure, like, I mean, Pandolfi's going to jail, the cover-up's over, and nobody paid any attention to it. I couldn't believe it. But Pandolfi had put this, and it was on Dan Smith's website, about the fact that we tell the president what he needs to know and hope we don't have to put him down, and not a single reaction from anybody. That just blew me away.
Yeah, Ron Pandolfi, he's kind of he's talked to me by email, but only on small talk. How about you, Lee? Do you know Ronald Pandolfi?
No, we've never had any contact.
Yeah, it's he's I've always questioned why he's so public about some of these things and these little groups, but. Maybe he has a right to do that. Anything new on the Avery grant?
Well, I know.
I mean, the Falcon. Who is the Falcon at this point?
Well, this is the story. The Falcon. This is the same thing I've said. Like, I've been at this for 37 years, and the last month is the busiest I've been in 37 years. It's just unbelievable. Like, because the story of the Falcon broke, and this was the story. It goes back into the 1980s. And this is similar to the Chase Brandon story. Bill Moore, who was probably the prominent researcher in the 1980s, who was the guy that made Roswell famous, came out with the Roswell incident in 1980, was approached by a high-ranking CIA official, and this official said, I represent a group of people. We want to help you get the information out. And so from then on, all the way through 30 years, I've been trying to figure out who this Falcon guy is, and I knew that he wasn't Richard Doty. I knew he was a high-level guy, and so in about 2 weeks ago, Greg Bishop made the announcement that he was Harry Rozitsky, who was a Soviet sort of expert for the CIA, And then he said, well, this guy had been called in to run this operation, and his interpretation was this is a counterintelligence operation against the Soviet Union, and the UFO stuff, the MJ-12 documents, and all the documents that came out after that, all related to catching spies. So this story broke that this CIA guy was this Falcon that people back then, it was the biggest story around, this MJ-12 story back in the 80s. And so the thing that interested me was the fact that they had said that Rozitsky had been hired to do this, which means that he wasn't the super top guy in the government running this operation. He'd been hired by somebody else. And an interesting story, even tonight, I was, and I don't know, I think Lee was involved when this was going on. This is back in the 1970s. You can see how all these stories fit together. And I was just going through Dolan's book tonight, and I'm looking for stuff for this lecture, and I come across something that actually I had put on my website and Dolan had picked up. And this is, I don't know if you remember, back in 1977, Jimmy Carter had come into the White House and had said, I'm going to be the UFO president. I'm going to release everything that we've got on UFOs. And just after he got in, he got in 76. In 77, there was this clip that appeared in the U.S. News and World Report under Washington Whispers. And I remember back then, this was like the story, and everybody's running around the UFO community. It was like, disclosure's coming. And I'll read you the line as to what was put in this thing. It said, before the year is out, the government, perhaps the president, is expected to make what are described as unsettling disclosures about UFOs, unidentified flying objects. Such revelations, based on information from the CIA, would reverse the official policy that has been, that in the past has downgraded UFO incidents. And I remember when I did my research that Stansfield Turner, when he read this, he had said to the people at the CIA, are we into UFOs? And one of the main researchers back then was Todd Zeckel. And when we're talking about the Avery, we're talking about Ryle Pandolfi, the sort of the guy that runs the UFO files at the CIA. Before him was Kit Green, and before him was Art Lundahl. Now, Todd Zeckel was good friends with Art Lundahl, and Art Lundahl was supposedly the guy who had briefed three presidents. So Dolan refers to this thing, which is a big thing, this U.S. News and World Report, the fact that there was going to be a disclosure. And so Todd Zeckel runs to Art Lundahl, who was sort of the head CIA UFO guy, and he says to Art Lundahl, he says, well, what do you think about this thing in the U.S. News and World Report? And he says, well, I really don't know. I'm going to have to go and ask the boys. And Zeckel said the guys that he was referring to as the boys were William Colby and Richard Helms. So you can see how it all ties in, because now there's this big dispute. Richard Helms was actually the guy who made a contact with Kit Green. He was supposed to be leaking UFO material, and now everybody's saying he was the Falcon. And Colby, if you know those stories, Stephen Greer said that he was contacted by Colby through a colonel, and that he was going to meet with Colby the same week that Colby ended up dying with this mysterious canoeing accident. So you can see that even back in the 70s, Helms, who's been identified as one of the key guys in the CIA for UFOs, and Colby, these guys back then, and now they're still the rumored guys that are sort of the top CIA guys who had the control of the information. So it all seems to fit together for me, and the Avery is an interesting thing. There's a lot of people that follow it. If you read too much of it, it can sort of give you a headache, because everything's code names and you can't really figure.
Yeah, I got an email here from Bob Inniger, your buddy. He says it's old hat and old news, and it was never anything official.
In terms of
talking about the Avery.
About the Avery, but I mean, Bob has I say the best story. I mean, he was contacted directly and given two films by the government. And
yeah.
One film, he put 8 seconds of the film into his documentary, and the second film they still have, I mean, they were directly contacted by the government, and there was no ifs, ands, or buts about the fact that they were dealing with the government. They signed a contract in the Pentagon with Colonel Coleman, and it was pretty obvious what was going on there. And then
you've spent some time with Bob Eniger in public and in private as well over in Arkansas.
Yeah, so I've known
you know
Bob
him pretty
for,
well.
What's that?
You know him pretty well.
Yeah, and I try to get him to tell the story as many times as possible, because every time he tells a story, he tells me something that that I really didn't know, like the fact that, you know, Sandler had the connections, that he had the sort of intelligence connections, and he could sort of, you know, make a phone call and get this to go or that to go, and the story just gets more and more amazing. But it is a direct story where they basically said that when they talked to Blue Book heads and they talked to go on to Holloman Air Force Base, that all they had to do was make a phone call, and everybody talked to them, and, you know, they were at Wright-Patterson in the underground bunkers, and it's just an amazing story of this sort of disclosure type thing where the government is in 1969 says the same as Chase is saying now about the CIA: we're not interested in UFOs, there's no national security, there's no ETs, we don't want to deal with this. And then 3 years later, suddenly they're signing a contract in the Pentagon with Eminegger and Sandler to do this documentary on UFOs, and they basically greenlight everything that they're doing and give them all this material. For example, they're giving the story of the 1959 psychic incident with Arthur Lendahl, the head CIA guy, and Art Lundahl, like Chase Brandon, tells them this story that nobody had ever heard before, the story that the CIA at one of the most top secret buildings, the National Photographic Interpretation Center in Washington, where they had actually channeled an alien by the name of AFA, and Eminegger talked to Art Lundahl, and he said, yeah, this happened, and the thing flew by the window, and they had the document. And so Bob says, well, can you come on the documentary and describe what happened? And he said, no, you don't understand, Bob, I'm still on duty. So the head CIA guy is telling him this thing, the same as Chase Brandon, this bizarre story that now we've confirmed is true, but didn't have to tell the story. Why would they tell the story and release this thing? So Bob has got a lot of this stuff that is as amazing as any of this Chase Brandon or any of these other stories. Just wild sort of, but his story is his story, and he really doesn't pay attention. Like when he goes to Ozark, he stands in the hall and talks to people. He doesn't go to lectures. He doesn't care. He's interested in his one story, his experience, and really doesn't have much belief in the rest of anybody else's story.
Okay, now we're going to go over a little bit here, because I want to talk about the Ministry of Defense. And Lee, can we embellish a little bit on this thing you wrote in your column about the military jets crashing as reported encounters of UFOs? That wording is not like Stanton Friedman. We were talking about him earlier, talking about, you know, battles that happened in the United States near Washington, D.C., and we may have lost a lot of UFO fighter planes to UFOs. Is there any more in that release that gives us the idea that maybe we tried to attack these jets and things?
Well,
I mean,
UFOs? Not so much that we tried to attack them, although that may have happened in a few cases, but the pilots very quickly would have realized that because they were dealing with a technology that was just much faster and more maneuverable than their technology, it's tough to initiate an attack on something that can outmaneuver your aircraft. There was one of the files that was just released last week from Great Britain included a project, a report that was just simply called Unidentified Aerial Phenomena in the UK Air Defense Region. And it had a code name. It was called Project Condyne. And it was the report itself was completed in the year 2000, and it was first classified as what they call secret United or UK eyes only. And among the things that were in this report that had both serious and frightening, what we call UFO overtones, were that there were fatal accidents of the Royal Air Force aircraft after they had supposedly UFO encounters. And there were several instances where either a single jet fighter or a jet on a training mission that had several members of the crew, where the pilot had to take evasive action and in some cases just plowed his aircraft into a hillside, killing the entire crew or himself. And while the Condyne report couldn't come up with any definitive conclusions, it didn't rule out the possibility that some unexplained losses of the Royal Air Force military aircraft may have been caused by pilots who saw an unidentified object outside of their aircraft, and it could have caused the pilots to be confused and to take action which ended up in killing them. So it wasn't as if they were being attacked by anything. It was their own pilot response to what it was they were seeing outside of their aircraft. But enough of these things happened that the military took it seriously. And so what they did was the person who actually wrote this Condyne report eventually recommended that all military air crews should be advised that in the future, don't make any attempt to outmaneuver an unidentified object. And that same advice was given to civilian crews as well. That was one of the things that they were very concerned about.
And Grant, Cameron, you'll be interested in this because we've talked about presidential knowledge, and your whole website's about that to a certain degree. This report, evidently, Prime Minister Tony Blair briefed on UFO sightings in 1998.
Yes.
Is there any evidence that we've ever briefed our presidents on UFO sightings?
Well, that's an interesting question, because we know that several presidents have been interested in it, and in fact, I believe Bill Clinton actually asked for some information and was never given information. And he even asked, John Podesta, was his chief of staff, to also try and find some information. But many people have claimed that while the president is the commander-in-chief, he doesn't necessarily have a need to know or high enough clearance to know about certain things, and that's in the hands of other people. So it's a very strange thing. Ronald Reagan once admitted seeing a UFO outside of an airplane. As you said, Jimmy Carter has reported and actually filed a UFO report. And so there have been instances where presidents have been very interested in this. Even if not even presidents, J. Edgar Hoover, former director of the FBI, was very annoyed when the military wouldn't let his FBI people get anywhere near whatever it was they picked up at Roswell. And J. Edgar Hoover sent what is now a famous memo, basically saying, if there are any other discs, we want to be part of it. We want to be able to touch it and look at it and investigate it.
In Chicago, at our main control room, they're having a very severe thunderstorm at this point. We may lose contact with them.
Well, UFOs, over. The UFOs are looking for electricity in the air.
Yeah, somehow you guys have been revealing too much information.
Well, sorry, come get me. And that's what I say. Hey, listen, you guys want to get me, all that I ask is, I want the interview.
Yeah. That's kind of the way I feel about it. Here, let me pull the mic out while you're arresting me or whatever. Or if you're going to beam me up, that's even better.
Well, I say to them, look, guys, I've been your best promotional agent for well over three decades now. I presented evidence about you at the United Nations in 1978. You owe me.
How did that go?
Well, it was amazing. Grant was talking about all the stuff that was happening in 1977. It also that year was when I started to notice that the Prime Minister of Grenada, Eric Gehry, started making some headlines. Every chance he had, he'd get up in front of the UN and he would make his speeches about UFOs in his little Caribbean country and how he wanted the United Nations to pay attention to his crusade, and the United Nations should get together and do something about this global phenomenon. And I also kept noticing nobody was paying any attention to the guy. So I arranged to meet him at the United Nations. I had already produced for CBS a documentary record album. Do we all remember vinyl records, guys?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I produced a record
album. I do some nostalgia shows, so I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, okay. In 1975, I did this album called UFOs, The Credibility Factor. This was an early form of disclosure. It was the first time that government, military, scientific, law enforcement people came together to put their voices on an album and to talk about UFOs. So I sent a copy of this album to the Grenada Mission in New York, and I said, please give this to your prime minister with my compliments. I would love to talk to him about an idea that I have. I felt that something should be done at the United Nations, but I also realized you can't just walk in off the street into the UN and say, hi, can I do a presentation on UFOs here, please? it doesn't work like that. And after they're done laughing at you, they say to you, no, you must be part of an official delegation that is doing something about UFOs. And if you're not part of a delegation, then thanks for dropping by, but goodbye. So,
Glenn Cameron, you got any closing comments here? We're going to have to wrap this up. We're already over time.
Yeah.
No, I've enjoyed hearing Lee's story, and I hope that he gets some more stuff out of Chase and gets some details about CIA reactions to this. And you know, I think it's been an honor to have heard Lee tell the story, and it's his story to win or lose. He's going to be the story 50 years from now will always be his story. So.
Well, I don't know, Grant. Thank you for that. I've really enjoyed listening to your stories, and you know what? I don't think of it as my story. I think of it as a hot story that's happening now. It will die down. The British UFO story came up. I'm working on a couple of other stories, how two of the stars of National Geographic's Chasing UFOs series, now they're complaining that National Geographic hijacked them and that the show didn't turn out the way they were promised it was going to turn out. That's a story to me. So I'm working on
that. Yeah, that is a big story. I was very interested in it.
Yeah.
You'd be proud of me that I didn't mention it because I knew it was your story, so I thought I'd wait and see if you brought it up.
Well, and you know, the other thing is, I'm not the kind of person who will say, oh, it's all mine. You can't have it. It's mine. I say, no, the more people who get these things out there, the better. I love it when other people have many of these stories, too. I say, let's get this stuff out as much as we can in a credible way with integrity and see where it leads us.
Well, yeah. National Geographic doesn't have a good reputation about that anyway. They do a lot of UFO shows, but I wonder why.
Yeah.
James Fox is not the first guy to come forward and say they changed things.
I know. And he has a really good, solid reputation as a documentary filmmaker. And he's done some really excellent work. So I feel his pain. I feel his frustration.
Yeah, and this is the first time he's really turned things over to somebody else. He may not
right.
do it anymore.
Right.
And this is an old story we hear in the business all the time. So when's your next column come out, Lee?
I'm hoping to get a piece out tomorrow about a story that just came out from Edinburgh University in Scotland. They're about to offer some online courses on how to search for extraterrestrials.
Wow.
And I love that. That's just a great idea because even Princeton University here in the States did a similar thing a couple of years ago. And so I think that's great because they can get a lot of people online who are very interested in it. And, it's called basically How to Search for E.T. So I'm getting that one up as fast as I can.
And, Grant Cameron, you're going to be in the U.K. in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I do that, and then I do Philadelphia end of September. I've got quite a few lectures coming up, and I'm just going to try to keep this whole thing going, the Chase Brannon and the Falcon, and put all those pieces together from years gone by and try to string it all together and maybe do a big article on it.
Okay, thanks both of you for being on, and
thank
we're
you,
a little over.
You,
and so until next time, thanks for listening. Until later, cheers.